You're listening to Vatican Radio. I'm Philippa Hitchin. English Cardinal Vincent Nicholls will preside at Vespers in the Chapel Royal of Hampton Court Palace on Tuesday for the first Catholic service to be held there in over 450 years. The Anglican Bishop of London, Richard Chartres, will preach the sermon at the service, which will be preceded by a conversation between the two church leaders, focusing on the history and unique musical tradition of the Chapel Royal. World-renowned Ensemble the 16, which specialises in early English polyphonic music, will perform works from the Reformation period, highlighting how, in the Cardinal's words, music can help us rediscover our roots and shared heritage. I spoke to Cardinal Nicholls to find out more about the religious, historical and musical significance of this event. Cardinal Vincent Nicholls, could you tell us about the origin of this historic celebration of Vespers?
Well, like the event itself and like much of our history, it has a complicated origin. I think part of the inspiration is indeed this forthcoming 500th anniversary of the Reformation. Part of it is a desire to find a fitting setting for the exploration of the music of the period. And part of it is the fact that the Bishop of London is the Dean of the Chapel Royal in Hampton Court, and therefore there is a personal connection between us.
The Vespers celebration will be dedicated to St. John the Baptist, won't it? And it'll be largely in Latin. Can you give us some more details of the liturgy itself?
Well, it will just follow the normal form of Vespers, sung Vespers as we do in the cathedral every Sunday. The music will be chosen, or has been chosen, to fit the history of the Chapel Royal. And of course, that is some of the most poignant part of the history. So the music is largely by Thomas Tallis and by William Byrd. Now, they are 15th, 16th century composers who, Tallis coming first and then being the tutor of Byrd, who lived through all the turbulence of the Reformation of 1535 and then the subsequent decades when the situation in England was actually quite porous and quite subtle. Clearly, Henry's rejection of the papacy opened the door to a huge cultural shift. But the full force, if you like, of the imposition of a reformed Anglican liturgy only took place very gradually. And both Tallis and Byrd wrote both Catholic music and Anglican music in English as well. And so they were able to move from, as it were, from side to side. And in many ways, the Chapel Royal captures that fluidity and uncertainty, or at least ambiguity, of the age.
It's important to remember, isn't it, that the Chapel Royal refers not to the building itself, but to the singers, the musicians who followed the monarch wherever he went, and became, as you were explaining, a key reference point, really, for the development of the English choral tradition.
Yes, that's absolutely true. So the Chapel Royal singers sang in different places, and many of those places are actually referred to as Chapel Royal. But the Chapel Royal is the body of musicians. That's absolutely right. And in that sense, the fact that nowadays we have an overlapping tradition of music is very important in some of the exploration of what we have in common. So I remember, for example, at a recent visit by the choir of Westminster Abbey, that they sang, I think it was Byrd's Ave Verum Corpus Natum in St. Peter's Basilica. So here you had a choir which now is part of a church which has some of its definite roots in the Reformation, singing a classic piece of Roman liturgical music in St. Peter's Basilica. And music can, in this sense, help us to rediscover our roots and our shared heritage, which is so important.
As you say, this celebration will be celebrating the progress that's been made over the centuries, over recent decades particularly, but also delving back, if you like, into that turbulent history, as you say. And it's particularly significant, therefore, isn't it, that this Vespers is taking place and, if you like, leading us towards reconciliation during this Jubilee Year of Mercy?
Yes, I think that's right. I'm not sure that the theme of mercy is particularly prominent in the way that this has been planned. I think it's more in the context of, as I say, the anniversary of the Reformation. But the other aspect of this event is, of course, its musical significance. And the choir that is providing the music for the Vespers is one of the finest concert choirs in England, the 16, led by Harry Christophers, who are masters at a full range of English music, but particularly the very classic Tudor polyphonic presentations of psalms and antiphons and canticles. In some ways, I suppose a purer expression would have been if it had been a cathedral choir singing the music. But this is the finest professional choir, and this is, I think, quite an important music event. So, you know, the Chapel Royal, the building, the chapel itself is not very big, and the availability of tickets for this event has in fact been handled by Classic FM, one of our classic music radio stations. So the event has religious significance, it has historical significance, and it is also a significant musical event, which will be recorded by the BBC as well.
You're going to be discussing, before the celebration of Vespers, aren't you? You're going to be holding a talk under the title Faith and the Crown, together with the Anglican Bishop of London, Richard Chartre, talking about the relationship between the churches and with the monarchy. Can you just give us an idea, perhaps, of the main points you'll be wanting to put across?
Well, you know, I'm rather looking forward to that part of the evening, because it'll be much more a free-flowing conversation than two lectures. And I think Richard and I get on well enough to probe a little bit, but also to learn from each other. Richard is a fine specialist, especially in the significance of the chapel in Hampton Court, as well as in many other subjects. And I know he hopes, for example, to hear a bit from me about the role of St. John Fisher at this time and where Henry stood in relation to emerging Protestant theology. And he, I'm sure, from his point of view, will want to explore Henry's continuing sense of being a Catholic, of continuing in a Catholic faith, even though, of course, he had repudiated the papacy.
It's a period of history that continues to fascinate people, doesn't it, over and above the spiritual or religious belonging?
I think it is a fact that culturally this Tudor period has become the source of great and varied drama. So there's films, television programs, novels, which have been coming out pretty consistently for the past 10 years or so. There are many reasons for this. I think partly it is a very colourful period, obviously, and the characters that are there are powerful and beguiling. But I think there's also, at a more subconscious level, it's part of an attempt for us to be thinking about our identity as a nation, where we come from and what the fundamental rootedness of the culture that we have and that clearly we want to not just preserve, but enhance where it comes from. And I think this Reformation period, as everybody knows, spread over 100 years, was really defining to what emerged into being modern Britain.
My thanks to Cardinal Vincent Nicholls, President of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales.